It's optional, Fox Sports Knoxville. I'd like to congratulate Houston Cress on breaking news before it actually happened. Like, that was weird. He broke the Jalen McCullough news. He didn't even know it 3 weeks ago. And then he commits today. But enough of that mess. For the first time, and I picked a horrible day because I feel like crap, but it's okay because he always brightens my day. He's a cool guy. For the first time on It's Optional, I am honored to have my buddy and horrible writer, Ollie Conley, on from four different websites. Ollie, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, mate. Much better than you by the sound of things.
Just shut up, okay? I just feel absolutely like death, okay? It is what it is, man. Look, I'm sure I feel just about you right now with Project O, and we'll keep it at that.
Oh, are you kidding me? I am dying, just like you.
That's fantastic. Okay, so I want to talk about the first thing today that's probably newsworthy, I guess, would be that Maryland's holding their, I guess you could say a board meeting, but they're going to talk about removals and resignations and all that crap. We kind of know what this is about, probably either about the buyout or DJ Durking being let go. How far do you think something like this stretches? We had this conversation a couple nights ago, but, you know, more information has kind of come out from the McNair family, you know, how they want him gone. How far does this stretch? Is it just DJ Durking, or does it kind of go down the coaching staff a little bit?
I think anyone on staff, non-football, so strength and conditioning, nutrition, and Durking, everyone's in trouble. They'll more than likely all be gone. And what's weird about it, so you have the morality side of can you employ guys who the school has owned themselves, which was a stunning thing. That never happens in these situations, right? Not that this is a normal situation. Schools never say, yeah, it's our fault, we did it. That never happens. It goes to litigation. You know, we go through all those kind of strokes. They claimed out and owned it. So the practical side is you cannot, the morality side is you cannot employ that guy after you have the death of a student athlete on the hands of that coaching staff. Whether Durking was involved in it or not, he's the face of the program. But then there's the practical side, which me and you spoke about, that I'm not sure if these guys can ever work again in the sport, because you cannot go into a college recruit's house and ever recruit again, as sad as it is that that's up on the list given the situation. You right. can never recruit again, because someone will come and recruit against you and tell someone's mum, tell someone's dad that, hey, you cannot trust this guy with someone's life. And then the insurance companies. Now, you will never get insured as a coach again at one of these schools. And if you do have the chance to get insured, the insurance company is going to hike the premium so high that the school is going to be like, it's not worth hiring DJ Durking and anyone on that staff. They're not good enough. So it's this is the biggest mess. And to me, Trey, this is the biggest scandal in college football in recent memory. All the other stuff, paying players, I don't care about. When you have a school that is effectively run by Under Armour, this is Under Armour's... Right. To Under Armour, what Nike is to Oregon, right? How can they not be at the forefront of science and training and testing and just plowing in research money into that school the way Nike does with Oregon? Why do you have these Neanderthals running these guys doing all these hill sprints till they collapse, dragging them on the floor? It's just a sickening story.
Yeah, and the way the response was handled too, it seems like this is all out of whack. You made a mention of something that I don't think a lot of people know about. And it's insurance when it comes to these coaches. So when a head coach takes over a position, they do the background check and the vetting and all that good stuff. Kind of explain to people real quick what it means by a school being able to get insurance for a head coach they're wanting to hire or already have implemented.
Yeah, so I won't declare to be an expert on this.
Right,
but this
yeah.
is why you hire search firm committees, right? So the school puts themselves at arm's length. It's why when we know that Coach X is going to school Y, it still takes a while. because the school has a set amount, a set insurance plan with whichever company, but then you have to notify the company that we're making a move, as you would do with any type of insurance, right. And then they want to do their own vetting. Okay, let us go through and check we're comfortable with the same plan and so on. And certain schools, giant schools, Alabama being one, will just have an all-encompassing mega money plan anyway. But yeah, the insurance company will be within its right to terminate the policy, because if this goes to litigation, and this is another thing we've spoken about before, that this kind of litigation is going to be so rough, because in discovery, they will ask for everything from this coaching staff. So playbooks, everything will be discovered from that school. And it's not the kind of thing you can settle, really. I mean, you could maybe choke $3-4 million at the family. But grieving families don't think in that mindset. They want justice. They've already said, no, we want him fired. We're not coming here for a settlement agreement. They took our son from us, so they don't think rationally in that way. So this could get so ugly, because Lord knows, you go into a college football program with free rate of discovery, you're in real trouble.
Well, okay, so staying in the Big Ten just seems like a freaking never-ending cycle when it comes to crap going on. Seeing, just throwing it up against a wall and see if it sticks in the Big Ten Conference. It looks like we're 4 days from Ohio State's self-implemented 14-day rule on Urban Meyer. In your opinion, how long does it get suspended for, and when do you think he comes back?
I know you
feel on it, but, I mean... Isn't everything like pointing towards him coming back, or what am I missing?
No, I'm such a cynic with these things. Now you get the initial flare up and the righteous outrage in this one. This wasn't a unnecessary outrage, as we often get these lynch mobs around these subjects. This was a real outrage. But once you get past the first 7 days and then the 10 days, and what are they going to discover in the next 4 days they didn't find out within 48 hours? You know, it's not going to happen.
Right.
So to me, it points to... But what I don't understand, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, is if you suspend him for a game, then you're admitting fault, right? You're admitting you found something. So if you find one thing, don't you have to admit you found that he has to go? Isn't he accepting some responsibility for there being any suspension? Doesn't it have to be all or nothing?
I agree. If you suspend him for 2 games, I think that makes the university... So if you suspend him for Oregon State... and then you suspend him for the big game against TCU in Dallas, I think you're admitting fault. So you're admitting, okay, yeah, he screwed up. He didn't do what he was supposed to. They can't come out and say, well, we're only suspending him just to please the media and everybody else, around the program. You have to come out and give reasonings on why you're suspending him. And I personally, look, man, I don't know. I'm not the type of person, I'm not in the power to say, okay, this guy shouldn't be coaching or not. But I will say that Urban Meyer is a pretty sleazy person. And we've known this for a long time. And it's nothing for people that have covered the SEC for as long or been around as like you or me or anybody, like Andy Staples. I mean, people know this type of thing. And he's not... Look, when you have 31 players arrested under your watch in Florida, and not just for, like, marijuana, simple possession, a little baggie in your car, like 31 players arrested for some crap, I think it goes to show you that you're probably not running the best program in the world. And then he goes to Ohio State, and, I mean, we know how big programs work. We know how cover-ups work. And everybody was talking about – here's what was funny, Ollie, is everybody was saying, well – Zach Smith got that DUI back in 2013, but he got it in Dublin, Ohio. It's not a big deal. Okay, Dublin's about 10 miles from Columbus, so it's the same thing. It'd be like me getting, a DUI in Oak Ridge compared to Knoxville. Like, it doesn't make sense, and I just think that it was kind of let up on, and I love your opinion on this. Did the media let up on it, or is Brett Murphy still – sitting back here waiting to release more information if they end up handing out him a slight sentence?
No, I don't think there's anything left to go to. Right. I think that DUI was maybe something to keep the story alive. I definitely think that Brent has like one more cigar in the box waiting for that day. But unfortunately, I don't think he's going to get to like that next week.
Yeah.
Urban, by the way, this isn't you qualified that by saying pretty sleazy. Just say sleazy.
Yeah,
there's no
true.
Pretty about it. I mean, he himself said this, remember? When he was at ESPN, he was like, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. I sold my soul to win national titles. He said this. And then he said, I've transformed. I'm going to do it the right way at Ohio State. I don't have to do that anymore. Ohio State is so big that I can get any player. You know, I can get good players and good souls anyway, and we can win things. The question I want him to answer, above all questions, is why did you hire him? You knew of this already. This idea of should he put up the chain of command and all that stuff, you're getting into technicalities at that point. All I want him to come on record and say is, why did you hire him at Ohio State? You had no need to. I understand that, you know, there's all the lineage with Meyer's mentor and he's the grandson of him. I get all that. But he has never... Why does he just come out and say it then?
No,
they would get him fired.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, would you agree with me in saying that if Urban Meyer did not have Tim Tebow in Florida, Urban Meyer might be one of the worst, I don't know how to phrase this. Like, I know he won a national championship, but if he didn't have Tim Tebow in Florida, maybe one of the worst reputable coaches in college football, period. Like, just period. Yeah.
Tebow was the halo over the entire huddle.
Exactly.
Over the entire school.
Yeah,
over the entire
right.
school. You can go back to, I remember Jerry Foley giving interviews at the time being like, I mean, this thing is getting wild. That, you know, that was a bonkers campus during
yeah.
those times because just the athletic program and then just the student body as a whole. It'd be a great documentary someday, thankfully. But yeah, I mean, he would be on the Mount Rushmore of like, of dodgy guys. You know, he'd have had to skedaddle to the NFL where they accept those fellas. Or, you know, have been out of the college game or of a guy who got cast away to FIU or something because he was considered a rogue. He got two breaks. He got Tim Tebow and didn't get Tim Tebow to play. We're talking about all the intangible stuff that goes with Tim Tebow wearing, you know, his Christianity on his sleeve and all that stuff. But then also he did the year at ESPN. And I've talked about this countless times every time I talk about Urban Meyer. And it's no one's fault necessarily. Journalists should be independent, but when you get to know someone, it's really hard to start calling them a dirtbag on TV. You know,
no,
it's really
I
hard.
I agree with that.
So, what you have to do though is then when he leaves is to cover him objectively again. But they never dug into his past while he was there that year, and taking that time out was a glorious thing for him. He got a complete pass for everything that happened at Florida because he admitted some fault, and then he just went on his merry way to Ohio State, and it was as though everyone just forgot how bad it was at Florida.
Well, a lot of that goes on the media down at Florida at the time, not wanting to rock the boat. So, you know, it is what it is. It can go a lot of different ways. Okay, I'm in Knoxville now, and they got a new coach here. He's been on the job for about 8 months now, 7-8 months, and they got a big-time recruit today in Jalen McCullough. Some people have them at number 8 in the country. Some people have number 10 when it comes to rankings. Give me your thoughts. You know, this is the first time people here, but probably here in Knoxville are going to hear this. Give me your thoughts on what you thought about Jeremy Pruitt hire and the direction you see Tennessee going with the coaching staff he's put together.
I think they're in a better spot than they were with Butch, obviously. The thing I find funny with Jeremy Pruitt is this commentary around him that now he's a football coach. Now it's back to football, which is exactly what Butch Jones said when he came in. What they all say. They all rah-rah, they all bang the table. Oh, it's all this stuff. The champions of life and all that nonsense only came in once he wasn't actually winning football games. So
that's true.
When Pruitt stops winning football games, if he does, then he'll have similar ludicrous mottos for us to mock. I think he is a brilliant game day tactician. He is going to run the exact same stuff that everyone from that Saban tree on down runs. But I think he runs it as effectively week to week, and particularly on game day, as well as any of the other guys. I thought that Kirby Smart and all the guys who've come through there were better player development coaches, and I think that he is a better tactician and a strategist. That's why I think of him as a guy. Now, the big thing for him, as you know, Trey, is a lot of that stuff falls off your table once you're the head coach. You don't have time to be doing the strategy. So that's my concern, and how does he do as the leader of the program? We've had all the quotes about what he's like as a guy. All that stuff will fall away again if he wins. So I'd put it in the... It's clearly not a home run hire, but it's pretty good. It's about as good as they could have done, given the mess they got themselves into.
I agree. I think it's something where you're starting to see a change. I think the biggest thing, Ollie, was the strength and conditioning. I mean, you have to remember how many, I guess, strength and conditioning coaches Tennessee went through when Jones was here. But I look at it as Tennessee is kind of moving their way back up. Real quick, give me your thoughts. I know you watch some Pac-12 football a lot, and you watch USC, and you were following Sam Darnold last year. Give me your take on the pro-style offense that Tyson Helton is going to run at Tennessee. Like, what would you compare that to? Like, what team?
Oh, well, everyone's running the same stuff now.
Oh, yeah, a lot of read options.
Not to bore people.
Yeah.
It's read option. Everyone's passing concept is an air raid concept. They're all reading half the field rather than scanning the full field. The big thing about that offense as opposed to other ones is there's no rhythm at all, which makes it quarterback-friendly is the buzzword people like to use. Basically, see it, throw it. You split half the field, you take a tip from a safety of which half of the field you're going to read pre-snap, and then once the ball snaps, you look for a guy, if he's open, you throw it. So all that kind of stuff of sequencing up the feet of the receiver running the route to the drop back of the quarterback, you take all that stuff out. And so you just go off. It's not so much go off feel, it's all preordained before the snap, but it takes away a lot of the complexity for the quarterback, and it's just kind of, you know, see it and fling it. So I think in that way, it's very, very helpful for the quarterback. The big thing for Tennessee's offense, Trey, is the run game. The last few years, they were tipping plays. They had, as you mentioned, zero push up front. There was zero creativity. They should be a smash mouth spread where you spread out the receivers and you pull everyone from every which angle, and they have freaky athletes up front, and they should be getting those guys running different concepts where you have linemen at weird angles with these brilliant tailbacks they have. That's what should be the foundation of the team. I think the passing game and the pro style and all that stuff should all come off that run game. Run games are way more sustainable year to year, and I think that's what Pruitt will build the foundation on, the same way Kirby did, the same way McElwain did, all those guys off the saving tree, try and build that way.
What do you think? We talked the other day about the Gators and everybody getting a little agitated with Mullen and what he's doing in recruiting, but we were in July when we were talking about this. What do you think about Felipe Franks or Trask or Emory Jones? I mean, what? How do you look at this Florida team right now? Brian Jones from CBS Sports, and you know why he does this crap. It's to get attention to his Twitter profile or whatever the hell he's trying to do on CBS Sports Network. Pick Florida to be in the college football playoff, and I swear to God, I thought I was watching a college basketball preview show because it was Clemson, Washington, Michigan State, Florida. And I was like, wait a minute, it's a little early for college basketball. Like, what's your read on the Gators and Dan Mullen in that hire? Like, I mean, is he going to flip things around within a year, or is it going to take a little while?
I'm a big Dan Mullen fan. They just don't have the personnel to do what they want to. Now, they have all those springy Floridians all over the place.
Right.
And so he's going to have athletes in space, and it's an athletes in space offense, the way everyone now is playing athletes in space. So they'll win games, there's no doubt about it. Their question is not winning games, right? It's not winning 8-9 games. It's can you win 11? Can you go and win the whole thing? That's the way he will be judged. And that's going to come down to, and I've written about this countless times, I think he's a brilliant offensive mind. I think he can create chicken salad out of chicken you-know-what. Can he recruit has always been the big question, and I thought he could. I really thought he was going to go in there. It was going to be a different vibe. He's, you know, more loosey-goosey. He just fits the profile of Florida coach. He makes sense when the Florida Gators coach walks into a high school, and it's just not happening right now. And he can turn that around for sure, but I've come to learn more and more. I'm an X's and O's guy, as you know, and I love all the schematic nerdy stuff, but at this level, it is just so much about did you recruit into the top five? And for Florida to win a national championship, I think he's going to have to recruit in the top 12, top 10, and it's just not happening right now.
The rest of the SEC, I mean, what'd you think of LSU losing two quarterbacks in 24 hours?
Oh, poor Edo. Poor Edo.
I know, right? I mean, what the heck is he going to do, man?
And their schedule is so brutal.
So bad.
You can just see that thing running away so fast. And that's one of those tough things where all the advanced numbers are going to tell us they're a good team and they're not going to be winning games, and no one will be able to contextualize it because it'll be just a blazing fire of who can get out first to fire Edo. That's a rough one. That's a rough one. And yeah. Look, in fairness to those who do critique Ed Orgeron, like, he was brought there to be Dabo Swinney. It was to come in, to have the big-name coordinators, and to recruit better than anyone else in the country. That's what we were told was going to happen. He was going to put a fence around Louisiana. He was going to, you know, be the rah-rah guy. They were going to have these great coordinators. Even if it was partly Matt Canada's fault that that thing broke down, he has to take blame for hiring Matt Canada. That everyone knows what Matt Canada is. The word on the street is out there. Everyone right. knows who he is. And he didn't have the self-confidence to put Ensminger in charge, right, to propose that. He wanted Kiffin, didn't get him, so then he just went and got the shiniest toy he could to throw out to the fans. That's not how you run a college football program. He should have believed in Ensminger from the start, and now they're swimming uphill where they got a young team where they're losing depth at a bunch of positions, and they face a torturous schedule. So it's going to be a rough one for him.
Okay, last two questions. Give me your take for team besides Georgia in the SEC East, and then what's your feeling when it comes to the SEC West? Because you know this, I like Mississippi State and Nick Fitzgerald, but what two teams stand out to you from each conference besides, you know, the main ones?
And not just Nick Fitzgerald and not just Joe Moorhead, who, you know, the kind of the headline names of Mississippi State. That defensive line is legitimately the second best in the country. You can go, Clemson's got the best defensive line in the country, we all know this. Ohio State, Alabama, there or thereabouts. Ohio State probably pretty clearly ahead of Alabama at this point because not all those guys would be on the field. But that Mississippi State line, just talent for talent, that's the second best line in the country to me. So when you have, if you tell me, hey, I have one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the league, and I have the best defensive line, you would probably tell me that was Alabama or LSU, but it's Mississippi State. So to me, that would be the dark horse in the West. In the East, man, that's tough. The pick everyone's enjoying, obviously, is South Carolina.
I know, right?
The issue they have is, if you go through their schedule last season, they won so many close games, and they just led up in so many games they should have won. They were brilliant when they were underdogs last year. They were terrible when they were favorites. I toss a coin after Georgia to me.
Well, I mean, I agree. I think look, that game against that South Carolina-Georgia game, second week of the season, I think that's going to kind of like, I would say, nail it down in a sense, because one of those two teams is going to be up two games in the conference, and then you'll have Tennessee-Florida playing 3 weeks later. And I guess last question here, and I said it was, but I've said this from the beginning. If Tennessee could somehow beat West Virginia to start the year, somehow. I think Tennessee can run the ball for over 200 yards on West Virginia. It's not like they have a defense. Yeah. But if they can beat West Virginia to start the year, there's no doubt in my mind that they can start the season 4-0 and beat Florida at home, which would really be nice for them because it sets up them only needing three wins out of the remaining eight in getting to that plateau of seven wins. What's your take on that opinion?
I mean, you make sense. The problem is, and I hate to boil it down to this, but in this situation, it just is this. Who is the quarterback? Because Kelly Chris is really, really bad. And I know he's looked okay at practice. Remember, he's throwing against his own teammates. So that's not the best evaluation tool. He's just not a good player. And so if you go in and he's the guy and Garantano isn't Pruitt's pick, it tells you an awful lot about what's behind him. And if they start the season with Kelly Chris as the quarterback, I'm just going to wipe my hands and call it a year zero. And Pruitt's going to wait to find, you know, his talent in the upcoming recruiting cycles. Because you cannot tell me you're going to win 9-10 games and be right competitive at the top of the league if Kelly Chris is your starting quarterback.
Damn, you have a big opinion on Kelly Chris. Okay, no.
He's bad.
Okay, no, I'll let you have your opinion. That's fantastic. Ollie, so much fun, man. I really appreciate you coming on, brother. You know, it means a lot to me. Good luck with Project O. I know I will be looking forward to more updates on that, and folks will start learning about that over the next month or so. But I'm excited, and just stay conscious, brother. Be good.
Thanks, buddy. You get well soon.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it, man.
Cheers, buddy.
Ollie Conley with the readoptional.com, with The Guardian, Seagulls.com, whatever. Brandon's yelling at me. We got to take a break. Let's just go to break then. It's Optional, Fox Sports, Knoxville.